Discovery Bay regular CSD board meeting is now called to order. Would you all please rise and follow the record? Do tell me what you mean.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect that all members are present with the exception of Director Graves.
Thank you. Now is the time for public comments. The only thing we ask is you keep it to at least 3 minutes, and I have one card that will have Bill Helfer come up. And even though this isn't on the agenda, we'll take this position. But I sat through the meeting with the Parks and Recreation Committee, and there was discussions about there were discussions about some grant money that might be available, and I just wanted to ask that when you're determining and looking at how to use that, whether you're looking more than just the one request, and if you decide that that is the best and highest use of the money, that's fine, but that there be more information passed on to how you decided how to spend the money. Thank you, Bill. Yes, Terry, come on up. 3 minute rule.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Terry Mahaney, Discovery Bay Boulevard. A while back when they put these posts out here at the intersection, I congratulate you guys for being proactive. I think we're going to have to take one more little step and be more proactive again, because there's still the morons coming out of Stockton that are going up the crosswalk now rather than staying in the lanes where they're supposed to, or they're making a right-hand turn and making a U-turn right past that concrete island where the palm trees are and going back up like that, which is less dangerous than going up the crosswalk. So maybe somebody can come up with another plan with Caltrans to maybe move those or do something with it, you know, because it's still a death trap right there like that. And there was another wreck up here past, they're like right out in front of Spentex the other morning. And maybe we can request a little more patrol in the mornings and when the traffic is coming like a little crazy out there. So maybe we can do that. But yeah, we can just work a little bit more on some rearrangement posts out there. I think it's a great idea, but just didn't quite go close enough to the sidewalk. So, I thank you.
Close to the guard if it gets a little
bit. Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Staff, you want to take a
communication
into the Caltrans
into the project? Those and some other complaints have been directly forwarded to Assemblyman Frazier's office.
So they're working. I'm sure they were suggestions, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments? Yes.
Just one question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Please come to the
mic. Yeah, sure. Okay. Real simple.
Wait till you have the microphone because you're
here. Oh, who are you? My name is Carl Terry. I live right here. On the corner, there's some heavy equipment there, and I wonder what's going on. Okay, does anybody know?
We can give a little update a little later into it.
That'd be great.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, Rick. Rick, you were. No, Rick. Oh, Rick was out. Oh, I'm not sure.
We've Rick Pierce, Discovery Bay resident, president of the Discovery Bay River Otters. Since swim team obviously hasn't been here this season, I figured I'd come by and give everyone a little update on the end of our season here. We completed our season last month at the NEDA Champions. This is our by far and away our most successful season yet we've had. We actually won the Tracy Invitational, which is a very large meet for that area. Surprisingly, we won it with the smallest team in the league. out of six teams. We placed second at the Sea Dog Invitational and placed second overall in our league championship meet. And we weren't too far from first place, again, with the smallest team out there. We sent 28 kids to the Meet of Champions up in Roseville, which is kind of like the Northern California Summer League Championships. Kids have to qualify to go. There were over 50 teams, over 1,100 swimmers. And I just wanted to present the town of Discovery Bay with their annual plaque. I can give that to Carol. Thank you. And also the trophies that the team earned. This is second place at the Turlock Sea Dog Invitational. And this was the small trophy we received for winning the Tracy invite this year. We had our largest team win. Team we've had so far this year, it's growing. New coach Heidi McMillan had a lot of success. We had a lot of fun, although we definitely missed being in Discovery Bay. So I just wanted to give everyone a little bit of update on where the season went. And we had a great season, and we're looking forward to next season.
Thank you, Rick.
Hey, Rick,
congratulations.
Got one question. Rick, yeah, congratulations. How many swimmers did you have this year?
We were up to, I think, 115.
Wow, congratulations. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Over here, so Matt, can you find a place here to...
Thanks.
Like,
hold on, Terry, let me let the gentleman here. Come on.
Hi, my name is Eric Schwalbe, and I've kind of been like the gentleman that talked about traffic. My concern with living on Furwood Court, as some of you may have heard, we have a lot of vehicular traffic that is going very fast, excessive speed. I don't know if drag racing, I hear motorcycles, and I hear cars. And it, in my opinion, and I think it's my past experience can verify it, is that it's not a matter of when we're going to have a fatality in Discovery Bay Boulevard, or not whether if, it's a matter of when. And hopefully it's not an innocent citizen. The traffic is out of control. I certainly understand the CHP and the sheriff's office are understaffed. And I know that we don't have a contract with the TSO. But again, it's an area of concern, especially after 4 or 5 o'clock in the evenings. And Saturday, it's like a drag strip out here sometimes. And again, I just, it's sad to say, but I know it's going to happen. And hopefully there will be something done about it. Something does to be.
Maybe you can speak to the officers in the back of a time frame that you think they would.
Well, I saw that they have a time frame here. Thank you.
We had a little more to talk about.
Sorry about that. Just forgot one thing. With those yellow cones out there, I think it distracts folks. And I've seen two of them come on the wrong side of the road on the inside. You know, they look at the yellow ones and go, oh man, I can't go that way. And so they come down the wrong side of Discovery Bay Boulevard. So that was the only reason. Thank you.
Any other public comment? Yes, Connie.
Some people can't hear.
You, pardon?
Some people can't hear.
Oh,
so
I will. How's that?
Yeah. I mean, better. The people speaking.
On this one too.
Turn it up.
Just the master. Okay. Thanks, Carol. Any other public comment? Seeing none, I'll close public comment and move on to the consent calendar. Are there any items that any board member would like to remove for further discussion? Hearing none, do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Down to D1, Supervisor Dan Burgess.
I said I'm not sitting
there.
He is here.
Oh, she's hiding in the back. Hi, Leah.
Good evening, directors. Can you hear me? Okay. Just a quick update on the blue-green algae. The State Regional Water Quality Control Board collected water samples on July 31st. All the results, except for the near the discharge point at Kellogg Creek, came back within safe limits. In the vicinity of the Kellogg Creek discharge point, South Newport Drive, with a caution level warning was recommended at that time for just that discharge area. Last Thursday, the Water Quality Control Board collected water samples again, and these results all came back good, including the discharge point at Kellogg Creek. So unless we get a spike in calls or a big weather change, we do not anticipate another testing until this winter. So just wanted to give you an update on the algae situation out here in the Delta. And then another just informational, I'm sure you guys are aware, but more for the public, the grading that's taking place at the property across the street. So Hoffman developed the Discovery Bay West development and had some extra dirt left over from that project. Hoffman applied for a grading permit back in October of 2018 to move that extra dirt from the Discovery Bay West development to the Discovery Bay Shopping Center, this parcel that's right here. It's currently zoned as commercial, and no plans have been submitted to the planning department for development. This was simply a way for Hoffman to dispose of the extra dirt that he had from the development from Discovery Bay West. So any proposed future development plan for this site would go before the Discovery Bay CSD Board of Directors for review and comment before planning would even review the application. So I just want to put that out there and rest assured.
While you're on that one, I understand that the time frame is a total of 4 weeks, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so it should be, it's already been going about a week, so it should be about 3 more weeks of new trucks.
Correct, and I know our grading inspector was out here on Friday monitoring the flow of traffic and the in and out and the project, and he will continue to do so on a weekly basis to make sure all is going well. And then, so code enforcement, I continue to work with code enforcement department on parking violations within the community. I was informed today by the head, our director of code enforcement, that on September 18th, the Contra Costa County Code Enforcement Division will be spending the day here in Discovery Bay citing the illegally parked RVs, boats, and trailers in the driveways. So if you have one parked out in your driveway, here is your warning. Remove it, because they will be out here on the 18th. And then about 10 to 15 days later, Conrad, our code enforcement officer, will be back to do a checkup on it. Any questions?
If a homeowner was cited for a trailer or whatever, and it's on his property, and he doesn't prove it, what happens?
Then a fine goes out to the homeowner. Administrative fine.
And if they don't pay the fine,
then they could tack it on to your property or lien your property.
All right, thank
you. I want to say first of all, thank you, G. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you, and I'm sure a lot of other people will thank you for that last summary. Okay. Tony, I believe, or Lieutenant Foley, I'm not sure who's coming up. Lieutenant Foley.
Good evening, Directors. Lieutenant Foley with the Sheriff's Office Delta Station, now operating out of 9100 Redwood Boulevard as of the 19th of August. So we're in our third week over there in the facility. So the report for the month August, we had 537 calls for service in the Discovery Bay area. We made 10 arrests. And we had, we wrote 43 reports. The biggest number of calls were again for false alarms, where we averaged more than 2 false alarms a day, home, residential, commercial alarms. No indications of any crime waves in the area. We did see the usual summer rise in autoverse and petty thefts, but then it's just standard with what we see during the summer months. The sun's out longer, people are out and about, nothing unusual to report. The deputies, the two resident deputies have been out and about. They've had a informational booth set up at Safeway about 2 weeks ago where they're just answering questions about commercial burglaries, I'm sorry, not commercial burglaries, auto burglaries. They were providing ways to prevent. It's more of an educational response just for the time of the year was, not so much that there's a problem going on that we need to solve. So they were out about that. They also provided, they participated in a, we call it a 290 suite, but it's those individuals who are being monitored for various crimes, sex offenses. But we did a 290 suite. We teamed up with some of the border agencies, and we did the survey in Antioch. So it's a routine suite that our 290 detective needs to do on a regular basis to be in compliance with the grants we receive in that position. But other than that, any questions? Yes.
Status of the license plate readers.
So the status of the license plate readers is LPRs. So the electrical engineer has completed his paperwork, review, write-up, whatever you want to call it, and sent it over to Caltrans for their final blessing of it before we can actually do the work, before the contractor can actually do the work.
Any sense of timing?
I attempted to check in with Borbley on that, just in order to Captain Borbley to get an update today. Wasn't able to get a hold of it.
I just wanted to give kudos to Tony and your CSO.
Yes.
You know, there's some likely places where vehicles are left for an extended period of time. The trailers are left. They've been very responsive, gotten those cleared out, and kept the streets pretty clean, at least over on Marina. And I appreciate that quick response and the challenges of moving some of those motorhomes and such. So thank you.
Not to steal Tony's thunder, that's actually CSO David Spiegel.
Yeah, you're right. But, well, yes. The message went through Tony, so Tony was responsive also. But yes, and I met him, and he's great.
I hide behind everything.
Yes. No. No, Tony's invaluable. Love having him in the office. He's a great conduit between the people of Discovery Bay, the board, myself, and the other deputies in the agency organization.
Tony happened to be the one that was. Made the bad judgment of giving his cell phone number one time, that's why.
Yeah, I'm talking about that. We're trying to get them changed. So other than that, any other questions?
Congratulations on the new facilities, and I'm sure everybody's enjoying it.
Yeah, we have an air conditioning problem, probably the worst time, but we're working through it.
That's
great. Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And Officer Thomas, that's you to be.
Hello, Board. Officer Thomas with High Control. The activity we had last month out here, arrest-wise, we had 11 total. We had 3 for DUI for drugs, 5 for DUI for alcohol, 1 a warrant arrest, 1 for a stolen vehicle, 1 for driving off suspended license for DUI, 2 for hit and run, and 1 for reckless driving. The citations out here, specifically in Discovery Bay here, we had 14 for speed, 3 for reg, 2 stop signs, 2 right away, 4 unsafe passing, 3 seat belts, and 4 cell phones. Out here on Bixler, we had 7 for speed, 1 reg, 1 unsafe passing, 2 seat belts, and 3 stop sign violations, and 1 stop sign. The Highway 4 corridor right out here, there was 17 for speed, 6 for registration, 4 right-of-way violations, which would be the passing there on the shoulder, 2 equipment violations, unsafe trucks, 1 seatbelt, and 1 cell phone. Additionally, last month or earlier, middle of last month when I talked about it, we had the East County multi-jurisdiction weekend. Just that alone between CHP, we had Brentwood PD, Antioch PD, Oakley PD, Pittsburgh PD, and the Sheriff's Office. We wrote 61 citations additionally out here on that. You might have heard this weekend, this Saturday, they had the sideshow activity that went on over in Antioch. I was part of that. Just the stats on that alone. We ended up doing 71 arrests, 14 citations issued, and we towed 26 of the vehicles, basically all the vehicles that were involved in that sideshow. We got wind that was going on, got together as the group began, and they hit it really hard. So we did that 14 months ago, and we kind of deterred them from coming out here, so we caught wind of it again. Hopefully this will take care of it for a while. So that's kind of what we did. We had last month, last week. So, you guys have any questions or anything?
Yeah, I have one. You mentioned you had four right-of-ways out there by the delineators. So even with the new delineators, they're driving around?
I haven't seen it myself. I was gone, but I had another guy come out here, and he said he saw that.
Yeah.
People just snaking right into smaller cars, you know, little commuter cars and stuff,
yeah.
Snaking right in.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a will, there's a way, I guess.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes.
I have two questions.
Yes.
One, when you make that left with the delineators, is it legal to go right to the right lane on a two-lane road? That was a question that was asked. Is it legal to do
that? You have one turning lane and you have your entering two.
Yeah. So if you turn left off of Highway 4 onto Discovery,
as long as there's no traffic right there, the best.
Yeah, with the delineators, it almost puts you into the right lane. No fear of getting a ticket on that, is there?
No.
Okay. The delineators, are they helping for your business, or do you still have the same confusion with the folks?
I want to bet on that one, that's why.
Oh. Well, we can fix that one. What's the bet?
It's already been paid. Forget about it.
The delineators, everyone's getting used to them. I know it's difficult for trucks and stuff to come in through there. You know, the turn is just, it's awkward right now. I mean, when I first saw them, I was like, well, kind of like everyone else was. But it's going to take time to get used to them. I think they do help. That's the design that there is right now. Maybe in the future there could be some different type of design or something. I'm not sure. So,
okay. Good.
Good.
All right. Thank you, Officer Tom.
Thank you.
And Battalion Chief McComber, ECCRPD.
Good evening, Board. I feel like I was just here. No, that was. So for the month of August, there were 50 calls in the town of Discovery Bay with an average response time of 9:45. Two moderate incidents in Discovery Bay. We had a motor vehicle accident that we needed to fly some patients out on August 6th, and then we had the vehicle versus structure over at CVS. Fortunately, no one was really hurt in that incident, and I guess the building is okay. However, I'd like to, and the weirdest thing, August was our busiest, slowest month we've had. So while everybody here has seen the absolute disaster that was August for our fire district, we actually only ran out 600 calls for the month of August, and average response time of 827. That included 3 residential fires, 3 commercial fires, 7 vehicle fires, 8 vegetation fires, and 18 exterior fires. We also responded to 30 regular vehicle accidents and 15 accidents that required rescue, 6 auto versus pedestrian accidents, 3 motorcycle accidents, and 2 bicycle accidents. So why I say it was our busiest, slowest month is, out of the ordinary, we have 4 major incidents in a 1-month span. While we get major incidents throughout the year, having 4 in such a short span is out of the ordinary for our fire district. Of course, the major one was the marsh incident. We did burn up 750 acres of land up there. However, not one single house was burned up nor outbuilding, so that was a good thing. I can credit all the men and women who are out there just busting their tails, making sure that fire did not burn up any residences up in that corridor. That is being investigated as an arson fire right now, and it's still under heavy investigation. That's all the details I can give you, but I know there's a lot of chatter out in the public on the how and the why, but it is still all under investigation as an arson fire at this point. Another fire we had was over on Sellers Ave. That was another almost 60 acres. We burned up some outbuildings, and while Sellers, we don't typically think of wildland fire, this is kind of the stuff I preach every month about cutting weeds down and making sure you have defensible space. So that fire started to back a walking trail. So that fire was also investigated as an arson fire, and it was about a 15 mile an hour wind that day, and anything over 5 miles an hour wind we consider extreme fire behavior. So as you can see, a 15 mile an hour wind, and that's why that fire blew up to about 60 acres, burned some outbuildings, threatened other structures, and it just burned through areas that there was no weed abatement. There's just high weeds, it burned through, started getting into some other things out there, like old greenhouses and old tractors that were out there. That was a tough fire for everybody, especially with the winds. The winds didn't really die down. It really took some good bulldozer work and some helicopter drops. Fortunately, East Bay Regional Parks was able to bring a copter out for us and make some drops. Then we had another incident on Anderson Lane in Oakley that also was a multi-alarm incident that started accidentally in a trailer, but the trailer was next to a workshop. Same thing, winds blew up, started spreading around the whole property. And then we had the incident just recently here on Highway 4 as you're going around Stornetta's Curve that looked a lot worse than it actually was, but as the engines were responding, the column of smoke that came out of those oleanders and it started getting into the structures. But again, the personnel that were on scene did a tremendous job of keeping that fire on Highway 4 kind of where it was. It did do some, a little bit of damage to the structures that were there, but none of them were burned down. They're still livable. I mean, there's going to be some repair work, but that could have been a lot worse. It could have burned the whole property. So, again, I preach every month, and now there's a little more people here, and I do with every board meeting I go to. If you have weeds, cut them down. We're starting to get to the peak of fire season here. October's just around the corner where we get the dry weather and the winds. It's not necessarily the temperature. It's the winds and the lack of humidity that cause fires. As I say this right now, down in Murrieta, California, they got a huge fire blown up right now that's threatening a ton of residences and requesting strike teams from all over SoCal. So it's coming. Please be prepared. If you have properties, weeds, please cut them down. Do it in the morning so you don't accidentally cause a spark and start a fire. Because, again, we've had a ton of fires in just a one-month span. We're nowhere near done with fire season. So moving on to a happier thing. Just to remind everybody, next Saturday, the 14th, our open house at Station 59 on Bixler. I brought up last couple of meetings, but we'll have a couple other agencies there with us. AMR will be there to do some hands-only CPR training. We'll have Hold Your Horses there to talk about doing some livestock stuff. They're a wonderful organization out here if you haven't heard of them. They'll be there with a bunch of pamphlets. And then our PG&E will be doing a live demo with their electrical table. I don't know if anybody's seen that. It's kind of cool to explain how electrical works. So that'll be Saturday the 14th on Bixler Road from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And I hope everybody comes and brings their kids. And that is my operational report this evening. I'm available for questions.
No, good job.
Thank you.
Okay, on to presentations, and I'm going to reverse it. Looking at the crowd, I think most are probably here with relationships to the pool. So we'll reverse the two. Instead of the rate study first, we'll do Terracon Consultants first. Staff?
Okay, the board authorized staff to engage the pool design services of Terracon in three phases. Phase one is the design development phase with an updated cost estimate. Phase two is the construction document phase, and phase three is the agency review and bidding phase. Terracon is here to present the completion of phase one design and provide an updated cost estimate and to obtain any feedback from the board. Staff is not seeking any particular decision from the board, and absent direction otherwise, Terracon will proceed into phase two, which is the construction document phase. So I'd like to introduce Ron Bravo to the podium to talk about the design and the cost.
Good evening, board. Thanks for inviting me. As Mike said, we provided a set of construction design development drawings, the first phase of construction documents for your review. It's a further development of the drawings that we did as part of the study. It's a visual representation of what the pool is planned and proposed to be. So it's a great opportunity for you to look at it, review it, look at size, depths, dimensions of the pool to make sure it's still in compliance with what your initial desires were with regard to programming and programmability of the pool. In addition, we provided a preliminary, we call it a opinion of probable cost, and included with that is a breakdown of the components. Now, if you review the plan, you'll see that there's much more development that we're showing around the pool, so it's not just the pool. We relocated the mechanical room, or the intended location of the mechanical room, to reflect a better circulation around the pool. And we revised to show some landscaping areas. Although we're adding to scope, the opinion of probable cost has remained relatively constant. And our hopes are that we can add some more features to the site so that when we bid the project, there's going to be some options so that there'll be a base bid, which will be the pool and building, and then additional landscaping would be an opportunity for the bidder to provide costs. So if the numbers work out right, we can add those options into the scope of work for the contractor. So are these numbers all public already, Mike?
Do you have the numbers you can post?
I have it right here on the...
Looking down briefly, you can see that the pool estimate one, and we've broken it down into different sections with the pool estimate, deck equipment, loose equipment, maintenance equipment, safety equipment, and the pool deck. If you go to the next page, you can see a breakdown. Now, it's easy to look at a cost estimate like this, and I want to urge you not to look at it and say, for example, a chemical controller. There's a number there of $14,000. I wouldn't go look it up on the internet and say, a chemical controller, I can find one for $7,000. Why is it 14? This includes contractor markup, installation, and the equipment itself. So it's not simply an itemized list of things, but it includes the installation and some contractor markup and profit. So I don't know if you want me to go over each thing, but is this available for anybody that's here, Mike? Within your audience, or?
Yeah, it's on the materials are on the table and it's there.
Well, I would like the original estimate that we had. I'd just like to have a starting point. The original estimate, I think, was $1,065,000. Do you recall that?
I don't believe so.
And the bid today is, if I'm reading it right, $979,650.
I just want to be clear.
And that's a starting point, so now be clear.
It's an opinion of probable cost. Yes. Okay, it's not a bid.
Yes.
Terracon, we're not contractors. We don't build the pools. We're not offering to build the pool for a certain price. We're putting together construction documents so it can be competitively amongst contractors in the market to bid it. So, yes, some numbers change. And when we initially do an estimate as part of the study, like we did here for you a couple months back, we intentionally have a little extra room in the number in order to account for things that could change as we develop the design. We're a little bit more general, so we're hoping that as we go, we're sharpening the pencil and we're getting quantities and equipment selected that will work with your project, and it'll take, the term we use is to cut some of the excess and fat out of the number and allow the contractors to sharpen the pencil.
Okay, now the board, please.
I don't have a question on the numbers per se, I have a question on procedure. So I know that to this number, when we submit things to the county, they're going to require us to do some additional things, handicap things or whatever the county has. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's all included already.
Okay, so do you have that in there? Your best guesstimate of what they think they're going to add?
Well, yeah, we've been doing this for a little while.
Right.
I've been doing it for 32 years. So
right.
We believe that when we put a set of documents together to go through agency and review, that we're pretty close. We don't anticipate big changes like them, you know, like flow rate, equipment selection. All of that is based on our experience and knowledge in the code and how we select equipment.
Right. Well, where I was going with that, and I trust your capabilities, or your firm wouldn't get here, but in back of my mind, I was in construction business a little bit myself. Is it possible, have you done this before, take where we are right now, I know it's a preliminary concept, basically, it's not construction drawings, but go to the county anyway, just have a general review and say, are there things that you see that we're gonna have, which would help verify your professional knowledge, what you think they're gonna say, prior to going to the construction documents, and that would help solidify some of these numbers a little bit so that we're more comfortable, and then proceed into construction drawings and we wouldn't have any surprises.
Well, procedurally, the health department is not set up to do that. They want a complete set of documents to review in order to do that. But what we have done is, I don't know if you're familiar with Dale Adams and Vermeil. Butterworth from...
Tony Adams?
It's Dale.
Dale Adams, okay.
He worked for Tony Adams.
Okay.
Or he used to.
Okay.
We did run our numbers past Dale for a sanity check, and his numbers were a little bit higher, so we feel good about that. So I think we're in a good spot. Contractors generally, when you ask them a number up front, will include, like I say, some extra margin in their number early on until they get a set of documents, because they also want the opportunity to sharpen their pencil when they submit a bid.
So in the numbers, and I haven't looked through them here, our restroom facilities would then be brought up to today's code that's in this, in these numbers.
Not all of it, but that's the direction we're headed. There's still some room from the original budget number that we were shooting at. So the basics of the pool, if once we define on this, then as we move into construction documents, we'll include all the other things that we know will come into play.
Right, but that could move this number up a little higher, correct?
It could, yes, but like I said, we have some margin in the numbers now, and we anticipate the actual numbers coming down a little bit before we add a few of the other things in.
So the health department has final approval over, I don't know how the process works, so the health department has the final approval over the plans?
Only with regard to the swimming pool.
Okay, what department handles all the like ADA and stuff like that?
There's some ADA with relationship to the swimming pool is handled by the health department, but ADA with regard to restrooms or the building or anything else would generally be a building department.
Right. Well, there's where I was going, is if we could take a preliminary plan, because we have the site here, take it to the building department side and ask to kind of clarify that part of it, knowing that you have the ADA, et cetera, best your knowledge for the pool design, to help us get to the next level, we have to make a decision. But I hate to go down the path, and due to those other things, the building department side, their numbers get too far out of line. So do you think there's a way to do that prior to going to construction?
Once again, we can ask for a meeting with them, but my experience has been that unless they have a complete set of construction documents, they don't want to spend too much time on it. They won't put anything out on paper say, this is what you still have to do. They won't grade your papers per se, but they will sometimes sit and have a discussion. But I don't know that what's already in the code and what we know the code to be will all be incorporated. So we're not quite to that point yet.
All right, thank you.
And if I could just ask you a question on that. What you're trying to get to is you want to see the number stay pretty stable and not radically change after they dig in a little deeper.
Yeah, based on our building itself, not so much the pool, because you've got that covered. Mm-hmm. It's to uncover the additional things the county might require of us, because we have to look at all that.
Right.
And I hate to go through the complete construction drawings and then get to the part in the health department's fine. And the building department says, oh, by the way, this, and for whatever reason, we didn't know that. Now the numbers are wacky.
So I think he's challenging you, Ron. Make sure your number's pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's our intent. Jim McClellan, who's our group manager, couldn't be here today. He's a licensed architect in the state of California. He's been in practice for almost 40 years. So he is actually directing the project. I am working on the aquatics portion, but...
I'm just trying to get myself comfortable. So he's been in this building.
Yes.
He knows what we have existing, and based on his professional knowledge, he's put some of the building stuff into these numbers.
You're not going to see it in that number yet, but he knows that it doesn't make up a large portion of the number. It's a relatively small number to get the building up to code.
Okay.
And before we move on, and Director, can we take this? Can everybody hear okay? Keep going. correctly?
Yeah, Ron, as we go through our deliberations and discussions and analysis and so forth, if we kind of find that, you know, maybe the number's too big or whatever, and we had to look at certain areas, and we said, okay, you know, if you trim this back a little bit, you could still have the pool that you want. May not be exactly what these drawings look like, but maybe it's $50,000 or $100,000 less. What areas would you look at that get the biggest impact if you had to trim something off the budget?
If you recall, when we did the study, we showed the basic pool, the 75 by 45 foot portion of the pool, and we had three different options with regard to the stair or the entry area. And right now we're looking at the largest of the three options that we presented at the time when we did the study. So, and I think at that time it was felt that was within the budget target that you were shooting for. So probably the biggest impact would be reducing the size of that L section and still maintain the same type of programmability.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Ron, I have a couple questions. So I'm looking at the total that you have here, page one, and then I move over to page two, which looks like that is a, it kind of gives us a little bit more detail as to where those costs came from, correct?
Correct.
Okay. When it says the item number, the second category that is bolded is structure. What structure is that?
The pool shell itself.
Okay. I don't see fencing on here.
Right.
Okay. I don't see a building on here for the equipment.
Correct.
Okay. It's pretty. They're not half the cost, but those are substantial costs that weren't included in this bid.
Estimate.
Okay. That we know that we're going to have. What I understood the board was looking for was a project estimate, not a pool estimate. And this doesn't help us evaluate whether or not we think we can move forward without including everything that's involved, from the parking lot to the lights of the pool. How do we get there?
We can update this and include that. Originally, when I was first brought on and we did the study, we talked about not doing it, including the building, and that you would be putting up a prefab building like what you have now. Not the shed that's falling apart, but the tough shed building where the you house equipment and storage.
Well, I think it all depends on what the county's going to make us put up there to house chemicals and the other things that are involved with running a pool. I imagine that the county would have some input with regards to code and what type of building we have to put up there. I don't know, though.
Very, very little, actually.
Okay.
If we could put out a concrete pad and put a chain link fence around it.
Okay.
So that's when I talk about additional features and options, if the budget allows and you want a complete CMU building, then we can go that direction. If you want to go with the prefab building, we can go in that direction. If it's more important to have the pool than to have the building and have a concrete pad with a chain link fence around it for a future building, we can go that direction too. So we're trying to build in a few options.
I understand. I just want to clarify that. That's okay. No, I'm not criticizing your work. It's very detailed, and it helps me to see what's involved, and I appreciate that.
We can provide a line item for a mechanical building. We also like, as I mentioned, landscaping and fencing. I don't know if Jim talked to you about it, but we talked about it as being, do you want to leave the fence the way it is? We're trying to enhance it a little bit and give it a little bit better circulation than what you would have if we just stuck the pool in there right now and said, leave the fence as it is. So,
do you believe that the design of the pool you have right now would fit inside our existing fence?
Yes.
Okay. No, no, I just wanted to make sure that I understood what was involved in the scope and what, and understand a little better what Ron meant when he said additional things.
Okay. And I believe, and you can help me, this is not the final one. And what you had mentioned, I think I can emphasize, is we need a total package. We need to understand what the total package is.
Project cost, not full cost.
Director Duto, anything?
Well, I guess just picking up on what the fellow directors kind of mentioned earlier, just trying to understand, when you build a pool this size, I imagine there's an estimate of the number of people who would utilize it, and the county then would look at that and say, okay, if you have a pool this size, you can have 100 people utilizing, I'm just making up numbers, which means you have to have X amount of parking spaces, you have to have X amount of bathrooms, you have to have a locker and shower facility. I think those are the type of things that you're trying to get at as far as understanding the additional costs of the project. And in your experience, is that typically what happens when a city or town builds a pool? That
you're partially correct, but they look at the size of the pool based on square footage. They determine how many occupants they can have in the pool. That occupant load then determines how many fixtures you need for a bathroom, or bathroom showers, any of those fixtures. It had nothing to do with the parking lot, the size of the parking lot, how many spaces. That's a separate issue. But the occupant load is based on the square footage of the pool.
So does our current building support that occupant load?
I think we're pretty close. I think that the revisions are going to be more about providing ADA access. But since you have a number of restrooms and shower rooms now, then you're pretty close to the number. It's not like someone's going to come in and say, you need 10 more showers and 10 more baths and, you know, 7 urinals and 3 toilets. You're much closer than you think.
I have one other question, if I may. Am I interrupting somebody?
Go
ahead.
Go.
Okay. Sorry. I can't. It's hard to see sometimes what's going on down there. We were at a, Director Patel and I had an opportunity to go to a Park and Rec convention, and we sat in on a pool consortium, if you may call it that, or a workshop on pools, because it happened to be relevant to what we were doing. And one thing that they mentioned was that and this might just be because it happened to be the city of Roseville that was giving the presentation. But they mentioned the fact that they had to do some work with regards to making sure that there was accessibility to emergency vehicles to get to the pool, because it was a public pool. And so there was they had to make sure that they had facilities that could carry emergency vehicles to get into the pool. Is that something that we have to worry about in the size of our pool?
I think you have the pool and you already have access. So I think you're, once again, it's not like you have a blank slate to start with. You already have the pool. Most of your facilities are already up to code. So it's not something that we anticipate. I think one of the decisions to relocate the mechanical room was about getting better access to the mechanical room and also to the pool.
Thank you.
You had mentioned, well, we can add a line item, you know. I would really like that, before we go too much further. I don't know about the rest of the board members, but I would like to see another line item for what we think the county ADA, or whatever it takes to bring this building up, whatever the suggested fencing arrangements you have, a line item for approximate landscaping, a light item, possibility for parking, all the additional things that we know we're going to have. If your firm could put in line items for those, knowing they're probably going to be off, it'll just help us so much more to get us to the next decision. Are you able to do that?
Yes.
Any other questions? Okay. Then. Yes.
Well, the question would be, okay, how do we?
I'm going to go to open the table. Thank you, Ron. We may have to come back up and answer some questions, but I'm going to go ahead and bring the. president's in. Okay. With that, I have a card. We'll open it to public comment. And the first one is Bill Helfrich.
Bill Helfrich, Discovery Bay resident. Again, your TerraCom, like your first study, I don't think this is giving you the, you know, the full project cost. Again, you're back to an estimate. You went to this to say, well, before we were talking about X number of dollars. Is that really what we're talking about? Now you've had another study and they've gone through here. But you look through this detailed report, like you said, on it, and I don't see anything for bathrooms. And when you, you know, and I don't know what code is, but I've seen the men's bathroom, and you have to kick the door to move to get to, you know, I mean, again, when you talk about the number of people who are going to be here, what you're going to have to use, what those kind of costs are put involved. So I think it's really important that you do get a total project.
Thank you, Bill. Any other public comment? Yes, ma'am.
Hi, Allison Watts, Discovery Bay resident. I just wanted to let some people know I have been to many community center pools in the last few years, swimming for my, or going with my kids to these meets. And I know that there are a lot of concerns for this facility, and obviously remodeling the building is probably something that everybody would like to see anyway. But as far as what's needed when you're having these amount of, you know, kids swimming, they don't need more bathrooms. We're not talking about a whole lot more kids or parents other than a swim meet, which is still a while away, years in the future. You know, I mean, you can get a porta potty. That's what most people do. They bring in just like you do for concerts here. It doesn't affect the actual facility. Even if you look at Lakeshore Pool, it's a very nice, big, beautiful pool. They have a men's and a women's restroom, no more than that. So I understand there are, you know, concerns for the ADA, and I also work in property management. I do know when you start building things that stuff gets called out, so I respect that and understand that you want to know all the information. But there are pools all over like these, and there's not fancy bathrooms. They don't have 10 showers. There's not a steam room or sauna. You know, we're not looking for this a Diamond Hills kind of aquatic center. It's a basic swimming pool with the same, you know, so hopefully there, you know, there isn't too much hesitation for that reason. So I just wanted to.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. Have you seen the layout of the current proposal?
Yeah, I looked at it. I mean, I just looked at it on here.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any other public comment? Seeing no more public comment, I'll go ahead and close public comment. And at this point, it was a presentation. Thank you very much, Ron, for the information. And I presume, staff, that the next phase is to move forward.
Well, the way I understand, from what I heard from the board, is the board would like to see some additional numbers on phase one to include some more things. So what I believe the board would like to see is Ron come back with those adjusted figures.
Okay, can we get clarity on what numbers we're looking for? So out of the regards of board health, let's talk.
I think Director Pease summed it up. We're looking for project costs. The pool cost is, you know, looks like it's been nailed down very carefully here. But if there's other costs, we need to know what those are, whether it's fencing or a building or a toilet or whatever it is. But I would kind of caution us that this is not, we're not treading new ground here. They've been building pools all over the world, and they've been building them all over the state and all over creation here. It's not that complex. All we have to do is define what we want. I don't think we should start looking for bogeymen anywhere, looking for crazy things that we think might happen, but let's talk to the building department, let's talk to TerraCom and figure out what a good estimated total project cost is.
Right, well that, and what was stated is TerraCom is reluctant to go to the county until they go through full construction drawings.
That's not what I heard.
I did not hear that.
I did not hear that. I heard that they want to talk to. The health department needs everything.
Right.
We go talk to the building department, they will give you some advice.
Well, that's fair.
That's exact. You're exactly right. I didn't say we were reluctant to. What I'm telling you is they don't do it as a practice. You don't.
So, are you going to go or not?
We can ask. I can't tell them they have to attend meetings.
I understand.
They are the agency, and they have jurisdiction over what you build. So I can't tell them you have to attend the meeting with me with incomplete documents. I can only ask, and they'll probably push a code book in my hand and say, here, make it me the code. But I can certainly request.
And I appreciate that comment.
Okay. And seems, with regard to the cost estimate, we will update it to make it a total project cost.
Okay. Staff, phase two consists of what?
Phase two is the construction, actually drawing up the construction documents and getting those documents ready for agency review, which is the third phase.
Okay. So, the board, we can do both. We can have you come back and visit us with the total cost, but and simultaneously, again, working on phase two. What I'm trying to do is...
No, that is not what I'm looking for.
I
only want to see phase one amended with additional and more complete project costs, and we are still in phase one.
Okay, so...
I agree.
That's fine. Remember that this was an estimate only. This is only an estimate. We don't have the documents to go out and get the bids. So if you're waiting to get a firm, solid estimate, it's still an estimate.
And that's fine.
We're going to stall as we wait for this. And I don't know how soon can you have that ready?
We can have it for a week.
Okay, so we have another meeting in 2 weeks. So we should be able to put them on the agenda to see that. Okay, so 2 weeks is not a killer time. I'm fine with that.
As long as you go down that road, Mr. President, please continue with that so we can get an idea of what the timeline, as you see the timeline to be, because I'm a little confused as to how the timeline's going to work.
I think we can satisfy the need that we have for both directors and director and vice president. Phase two, what is the time frame for phase two? And then tell me what phase two consists of.
Phase two would be the complete construction documents and preparation and submission to agency for review.
So the conclusion of phase two would be the distribution of those documents out for bid?
No, they'd be ready to go to agency.
Just ready to go. Phase three then would be?
Would be distribution and bidding.
Okay. Now, if we come in 2 weeks with a fine number and we want to go to phase two, could go either way, I guess, but if we want to go to phase two, what's the time frame to complete those documents and have them come back to the board to let us know if they're ready to go out for bid?
Probably about 6 to 8 weeks.
6 to 8 weeks. So I think that says we've got 2 weeks to wait for the other. 6 to 8 weeks on top of that. So we've got 2 months.
What's the estimated project, the time to build, to complete the project? What do you anticipate the construction project take time-wise?
Typically, about 12 to 20 weeks. 3 to 5 months.
3 to 5 months.
12 to 20, say that again.
What is
that?
3 to 5 months to complete the project after a decision is made to move forward, after the RFPs are in and after everything else is
done. And the only piece that's missing is how long is it out for RFP?
Typically, it goes to agency. Agency can take up to a month.
Okay, so there's another month.
Then you put it out to bid, which generally you want to give contractors. You can tell them 2 weeks, but more typical is 4 weeks for bidding. And then once you have a satisfactory bid, then it's up to you and how quickly you can turn around that bid and turn that into a contract and have it issue a notice to proceed. So a lot of the time is still in your hands as well.
So what I heard was 4 months at least to get through the process. That's not starting. No bill started.
Right.
If you believe me, that's good. 4 months is what with all the weeks that you added up. Okay.
Six to 7 months to complete.
Okay, 6 to 7 months.
If we went forward.
So we're about a year, but the year would put us into the summer as the bill is spring and summer, if it were to go that far. Okay.
Is there an additional cost for phase two?
Yes. You know what that is? I don't have it in front of me. I'm sorry.
Not to go to phase two, but to complete phase two.
Or to contract, we have to contract with you for phase two, correct?
I believe you've already signed a contract. We're just waiting notice to proceed into the second phase.
Yes. So it's already been approved. We're just waiting for the go. And that's what I'm saying. So if we go 2 weeks.
There's a cost affiliated with that.
Which we've already approved, correct?
We approved a contract with Terracon that consists of three phases. Each phase has a cost associated with the phase. And if you decide after the new numbers to not move into phase two that's in place and is there, if we want to,
we're done.
You're done.
Okay. Any other questions? Is it fairly clear then? We've got about 2 months to move this thing as soon as quickly as we can.
The only thing I'm not clear on is how much.
Just worry about 2 weeks. We'll figure out the rest.
So 2 weeks, we can have you back here with that.
If we can get back to you in a week, that way you have an opportunity to review it, and then you have another week before we review it again. Then you can say step on the gas, run and go, or you can say I think.
And we could take it to committee to take a look if that would be suitable. And let them massage the numbers and see if they're good.
Our committee? I'm thinking at this point, based on all the information that the entire board has, I would bypass that step just because it consumes time.
Okay.
If the rest of the board thinks that's wise, if not.
No. I think just didn't want to bypass it if that was.
No, I appreciate that, but I think at this point we're all involved. We're pretty much the committee at this point. I think we should just have him bring. We should come back and bring this onto the agenda in 2 weeks and move things along.
Okay. So,
unless not, I mean,
no,
I don't want.
No, that's good. I think that's a direction we should take, and it should be a presentation for the numbers that we've got.
Well, but I think it would be wise that we go ahead and use your abilities to get the general manager some numbers in about a week.
Yes.
He can disseminate it for our personal use, but yes, we have to come back on the agenda to make a decision. It would help us. It would help me if I saw the numbers. I could give a question back to the general manager, and you can possibly convey something to you.
Okay, Ron. Once again, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you very much. We'll hear from you in a week.
Thank you.
And staff, you'll have the contract available for moving forward in numbers for us, so we can see what this cost is going to be at our next.
Yes, I can email them to you. I mean,
I just don't recall what they are.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I know that we talked about them, I just don't recall.
Okay, moving on to the second item, which is F1, rate study concerning wastewater staff.
Okay, at the August 21st, 2019 board meeting, engineer Gregory Harris was asked by the board what the cost difference would be if during the wastewater denitrification project, all operations of Plant 1 were decommissioned and moved to Plant 2. Mr. Harris estimated that moving the operations of Plant 1 to Plant 2 would add $6 million in cost to the overall project. The estimate has now been revised by Mr. Harris to be about $10 million. Staff was asked and tasked to determine how cost additions to the project would impact our wastewater rate payers. Staff retained the services of Allison Lekowitz, who is here to provide a breakdown on the costs over time. Staff also consulted with our bond underwriters, who advised that the most suitable bond durations are those that are 20 to 35 years, because shorter or longer bond periods are not as attractive to the purchasers. If there are no questions for me, I will bring up Allison to present her analysis. Allison.
Can everyone hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right. So, as Mike mentioned, the town is currently reviewing options to upgrade the wastewater treatment plants to add denitrification.
We don't quite know the final cost yet, but it will depend on the selected engineering alternative. The range could be $15 million, and we now understand it could be $25 million. The $21 million is a little premature. And the last rate study was completed July of 2016, but didn't anticipate those improvements. So this would be an added cost, not currently recovered in the rates. So a new funding source would be needed, and this presentation provides potential debt scenarios. So some quick disclosures, I'm not advising or recommending any particular type of debt. It sounds like you have some information from underwriters who can help you do the final structure and timing once you get to that point. This is really high-level planning estimates based on general bond market data. And so then once you finalize your alternatives and options, you'll fine-tune the debt scenario. So first I wanted to talk about your current rates and charges, how much money you're collecting, and what is your current capacity to take on new debt. And I understand there's a lot of numbers in this table, but I wanted to just go over a few items quickly. So this chart is your annual disclosure. So you have the 2012 bond outstanding. You also have the 2017 sewer bonds outstanding. And so each year you're required to publish a disclosure, which reassures the bondholders that you can pay back the debt, but it also provides a lot of good information about your financials. So the gross revenues are projected at about $6.4 million, and after you pay your operating costs, you have about $3.4 million. So those are your net revenues. But from that amount, your current outstanding debt takes up about $1.1 million. So that's obligated funding that you have to pay to pay off those 2012 and 2017 bonds. But that leaves us some net revenues of about $2.3 million. An amount of that is dedicated to cash funding capital improvement, so pipeline replacements, trucks, kind of smaller capital items that come up throughout the year. Those net revenues are using for paying those projects. But that net revenue could also be used as a dedicated payment source for new debt. So I wanted to talk about how much new debt that extra money could support. So this is your current estimate. So you have the $3.4 million in net revenues, $1.1 million of that is for your current debt. But based on that, the net revenues, you could support $1.6 million in new debt without raising the rates. So at your current revenues and your current expenses, you have quite a bit of debt capacity, potentially, without raising rates. Again, the big caveat is some amount of that is probably dedicated towards those smaller capital projects that I mentioned. But you do have some capacity to pay debt. And I wanted to point out in the previous chart, I said that the net available was about $2.3 million. And then here, it's only $1.6 million. And you're probably understanding, or probably questioning, why is there that difference? And the answer is there's a legal requirement that you have to hold 25% extra on top of your debt payment as kind of a financial cushion for the bondholders. So the idea is if your debt cost was $100 a month, you have to keep $125 in your bank account. And that's a legal requirement just to make the bondholders happy. So even though you have over $2 million potentially available, the amount that you can actually spend on new debt would be $1.6 million. So as I mentioned, you have two outstanding bonds. The credit rating on those was AA minus and then AA uninsured, which is a very good credit rating. So we expect good interest rates. So I estimated new debt service costs based on similar recent bond sales. So I looked at other utilities in California that sold bonds over the summer that had roughly the same credit rating. And then I looked at competitive bonds that were serial bonds with local annual debt service. And that's a lot of jargon. but basically it means I looked at other bonds that are structured like your current bonds. Level annual debt service, meaning you're paying this about the same each time, and it's structured very similar to a mortgage where you're paying a lot of interest and a small amount of principal in the early years, and then a lot of principal and a small amount of interest in the later years. All right, so I have a few charts based on debt service costs per however much you might issue. So this first chart is per $1 million borrowed. And then I have some estimates of the impacts on the sewer rates. Okay, so I looked at a range of maturities from 10 years to 40 years. I absolutely agree that the outliers, the 10 years and the 40 years, are a little bit more rare, and so are somewhat less attractive to investors. So I have less confidence in those estimates and more confidence in the 20 and 30 years, just because those are more commonly sold. So I did some estimates of the range in interest rates, 3.4% up to 4.6%, and the impact on the monthly equivalent sewer bill. So currently the sewer bill is $82.55 per month, and estimating the town has about 6,000 sewer customers, we have an estimated impact on rates per month. So the $1 million level, you're looking at 2% to 1%, kind of depending on the maturity. And then I also ran the same scenario for a $15 million bond issue. And it's the same interest rate, just more is being borrowed. So it's the previous chart, then times 15 million. So 35% to 15% rate change. And then this chart is, of course, a little out of date at 21 million. So we'll just show it quickly and then move on. So again, brief presentation with some just very broad planning level estimates of bond costs that you might pay. Again, I don't have a crystal ball, but this is you know, best estimates based on recent bond sales this summer. So just to conclude, you have about $1.6 million in additional debt service capacity at current rates, and $1.6 million is about $22 a month equivalent rate, you know, burden for the public. Although some of that is likely dedicated towards capital projects, like I said, the smaller capital projects like pipeline replacements and vehicles. And then just a summary of the 30-year impact of the different borrowing scenarios. And again, the $21 million is out of date at this point. All right, so that was very breezy, but I'm happy to answer questions.
As you've looked and done your analysis of the current rates, are they stable? Are they going up, going down? It looks like over the last couple of months, there's been any changes in the market.
I looked back a few months and it was pretty stable. Yeah.
And is it expected with the election coming up next year, is that expected to change? I know we never know, but
I don't want to speculate. Yeah, I don't have my crystal ball today.
You said that 1.6 million is equivalent to about that $22 of funding that $15 million chart, if I remember correctly. Is that what you said?
No.
Okay. Go back a couple of charts. Go back to the, there you go. Well, right there. Okay, so that's a 60, let's just call it a 30-year takes a $15 impact rate increase, right? What did you say that the 1.6 million that we already have, that we could have available in debt service would cover per month per person?
It's about $22.60. So you take the per month. So you take the 1.6 million divided by 12 months and then divided by 6,000 customers.
That's the part of the amendment. So I was doing the math and it didn't come out. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Well, just since a lot of, since this is a lot of, it's not necessarily hypothetical, but their estimates are just giving us a general view. So if that's the case, then you're saying that roughly there'd be $7 left over after debt service that could help to achieve buying a new truck or continuing on with the pipeline replacement project or whatever that those other ancillary items are that you mentioned. Is that correct?
Right. Under the
20 years
scenario.
Okay. I'm good. Just wanted to trust
you. Okay. Thank you, Allison.
Well done. Thank you.
And now I will open it up to public comments, and I have a card from Bill Helfrich on this item.
What concerns me is, I have no argument with her rates and her calculations. I mean, those are pretty straightforward. What scares me is your cost estimates for this at between $15 to $24 million for this project, depending on which way you decide to go, whether you're going to do plant two or you're going to rehab plant one, how are you going to do it? It still, though, is my understanding that there are reserve funds that you have available to you from the rates that you've been charging over the years that haven't been gone to debt service and haven't gone, operating expenses. So that you're talking, though, here of it seems like 100% financing of this project, when in fact, maybe you have 2, 3, 4, 5 million. I'd have to get the financial statements to see what is available in your director of finance. So I'm really concerned that you just keep going ahead and say, we're just going to borrow everything we're going to spend, and we're not going to look back at what we've saved over the years for these capital projects. I find it very important that you need to look more at the whole project than just to say, this is the cost and this is what we're going to borrow. I tie that into the issue of the pool. There had been discussions that money from the wastewater fund could be borrowed to build the pool while you're waiting for the Hoffman money to come in. And you'd be using the Hoffman money to pay back the wastewater money. So if you do that, that's going to force you to borrow more money here. So in my opinion, you would be borrowing bond money to build the pool. So I think you need to be very careful with how you're going to use your wastewater.
Good input. Thank you. Any other public comment? I'm going to go ahead and close public comment. I think further discussion by the board.
I appreciate the presentation. I just wanted to know what it costs for $1 million. But so whether our project is $1 million or $20 million, we know what that. We can do the calculations to figure out the number if you need. Thank you.
And
I think the real number is trying to figure out and separate out all the projects that we have to do, state mandated. One of them is denitrification. We have no reserves for denitrification. That was not a project that we would put money away for because it was just put onto us by having to go out and get a new permit. That's the whole purpose of why we're discussing going out and getting a bond. Now, in addition to that, we're trying to look ahead and say, well, we have, in order to make denitrification work because the state mandated, they don't give us any money to do it, we have to take a look at our current plant number one. Do we rehab that? In addition, put denitrification into that plant, and we also have to denite plant two, or does it make sense to move plant one over and make a new oxidation ditch and bring that plant two up to capabilities that we have and disregard the plant one? What is that? What's that difference? What does it actually cost us to do that? That's over and above what all the other things we have to do, general maintenance and things like that. So when would we have that discussion?
We have to make a decision at some point what direction we're going to go. And so we're looking, I think at the wastewater meeting, we talked about having some figures presented to you at the next board meeting, and then we're looking at some semi-final decisions made at the first meeting in October, and then we need some absolute decisions at the second meeting in October, so that we can we have to start design at that time. So once we know that, then we'll know what kind of figure, what directions you pick at those meetings will determine what the cost will be of the total project. And then from there, you will make a decision on what kind of debt, if any, you want to engage in, and how much debt you want to engage in at that particular time. And we'll start working with our bond people to provide you information on that.
Okay, and the comments, Bill, were very good coming in. And right now, that what we had asked for in this meeting was a comparison of what is the cost to get, it's actually the delta between the two. Plant one or the plant two, and so we looked at the worst case numbers, but we will take a look at all of the plants on the areas. Any other questions on this? Okay, thank you very much, Allison. Very good presentation, as expected. Moving on to G1, discussion of possible action regarding contractor. Independent audit.
So, do you have to talk about that?
Good evening. Before you is the engagement letter for auditing services with Croce, Sanguinetti, and Van Der Veen. This item was discussed at the Finance Committee meeting on August 7th. Where staff recommended retaining our current audit firm and rotating the supervising auditor. This is an industry practice and will provide the audit with a fresh perspective. So staff is recommending that the board approve the engagement with Croce, Sanguinetti, and Van Der Veen to perform the annual audit, financial audit, and submission of financial reports to the California State Comptroller's Office for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2019.
Any clarifying questions? Thank you, Dina. And I will open it up to public comment, and we have Bill Alfred.
I'm a retired CPA.
I'm questioning
really?
The retired.
I'm retired.
Here's my problem. You've had the same auditing firm for a number of years now. I think it's time for more than a change of just the managing auditor. I looked this firm up. There's three partners, they call them shareholders. There's five CPAs, there's one senior accountant, there's four staff accountants, and there's two admin persons. There's only 13 accountant types in the firm. It's not a very big firm. To keep this independence and a fresh look, I don't know, they're just too small. Everybody's gonna know what's going on. I think you need to look at another firm, because I know that Sarbanes-Oxley requires public entities to change their auditors more regular. I think you've got a 5-year term on the thing. You've had these people 7 or 8 now, and I would really rather see, rather than just taking one managing partner and putting another one in place, is actually go out and shop for another firm. Thank you, Bill.
Before they were Croce, Sanguinetti, and Van Der Veen, they were Croce and Company. And so we worked with Croce and Company, and then probably within the last 3 to 4 years, we moved on as they broke off to create Croce, Sanguinetti, and Van Der Veen, and then we moved with them. So it was a larger firm before as Croce and Company, but now it's Croce, Sanguinetti, and Van Der Veen, and we broke off and moved with them. So,
thank you for the clarification. Any other public comment? Seeing no further public comment, I'll close the public comment. I bring it back to the board.
This is a point of reference for myself. Firms that public agency hire, do they have like a license or certification or something like that that they get from the state in order to be able to buy this work?
I don't know the answer to that. I'm sorry.
I don't know. We can check and find out for you.
Okay, but CPAs have to have a license to perform their work. Yeah, and are they, do they get that renewed every year or two?
2 years.
Okay. So the three or four managing company partners that are in this particular, or more, are all certified by the state to do this work?
Yes. They have to be CPAs.
We reviewed this in the finance committee meeting with approval of the staff recommendation.
Second. Okay.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Manager's reports. I'm looking. Yeah, okay. I'm assuming it's one of the confirmation. Okay, director's reports. First one, communications committee.
Thank you. Yeah, communications committee. Man, we had a discussion on the electronic sign board policy, and it was just a review. There were no suggested changes. There was a discussion that came up about the fee that we charge all nonprofits that meet our policy criteria, a fee of $50, and it was decided that would seem to be fair and reasonable. So we haven't, the committee isn't suggesting any changes to the policy at this particular time. And it appears that the policy is set up enough that the staff has adequate review to make sure that what's put on the electronic board is a good public sense, and we shouldn't have any issues. That's my report from the communications committee.
Thank you, Vice President Pease.
Oh, let me add one other. I just came to me. It was discussed that staff has to, they're in a learning curve for the programming of the electronic sign. So it was suggested that we contact the manufacturer or one of their distributors to see if they offer a training program of some sort to help our staff come up to speed a little quicker, so that we can have jazzier info on the sign somehow. I don't know how to say that, but so staff's going to look in and see if we can't come up to speed a little quicker.
More creative, more creative stuff on the sign.
Huh? That's a very good word. Yes.
Yes.
In view of black and white, we're going to move into technical.
That's actually black and white. Okay. Thank you. Parks and Recreation.
Thank you, Director Pizzillo. Let me take this for you. We discussed numerous items of noted interest that isn't, hasn't already been to the board here tonight would be the upkeep of the bathrooms at Cornell Park. We found out that there was some issues with that, and we have corrected those issues, and we have made sure that our maintenance team is looking at that on a regular basis and maintaining those in a better fashion. We also discussed some funds that are becoming available. They're still available through our WW grant money, and how best to use those funds within the restrictions that we have. And our staff is making some recommendations to us for that. And we approved moving forward with discussing a new Eagle Scout project, which I'm excited about because we have history here in the town of supporting Eagle Scout projects, and we get something for nothing out of it, and it works out really well for both the scouting community and for the town. And that's about all that's different than we've already seen. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Director Graves. And last committee meeting, water and wastewater committee meeting.
In that committee, we talked about the rate study, which we just went over here in reference to moving plant one to plant two. And it, we discussed it and had a average, it looked like it'd be about $10 a month or about $10 million. So we're going to verify that, and I think we have a presentation at the next meeting from our engineer to fine-tune what just that item. Well, they'll have all the items, but be able to separate out that actual cost to move from one to two. The next item we got into, well, 4A, we just rehabbed They thought the motor was fine. The motor is having some problems. It's still pumping, but the engineers are suggesting that we take a look at replacing that pump. Bottom line, it's probably about a $150,000 item, which would put a new pump in there and give us probably another 20 to 30 years. So that'll be coming down the road.
4A is over here? No.
Newport.
Yeah. Where's 4A?
Newport.
That's okay. Newport. At the plant. Okay.
Yeah, we did. They rehabbed it. One of the line items on there, which I asked about, to have a submergible cable that connects it, and runs about $65 a foot, which should be about $14,000. So I asked the engineer if there's a possibility that we could reuse that cable and at least save $14,000. He mentioned they had to splice it. It's working fine now. They're going to look at that as the first alternative when they come back with the proposal. If it can't be reused, then it's a short lead time to get a new cable, so it won't hold up the project at all. But we're hoping to be able to reuse the cable.
Thank you. Any other reportable items? Seeing none, we'll move on to general manager's report.
I just wanted to, Director Graves stole my thunder on the bathrooms, but we followed that up with some of the concerns that were expressed to the board, and we put some safeguards in place and worked with the janitorial company to ensure that it's being properly cleaned on the days that they're here. So we'll continue to monitor that and try to keep the bathrooms in good clean shape.
Good, thank you. Any update on the drinking fountain? One of the homeowners had mentioned. Yeah.
For the baseball. Brian, you want to speak on that?
Yeah, it's been ordered. It takes 4 weeks to get them. Okay. So it's about 3 weeks out.
Good. Thank you, Brian. And thank you, staff. We did receive, for information only, Byron Municipal Advisory Council meeting minutes from July 23rd. Any future agenda items? None. I will call the meeting adjourned.